Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
South Carolina's got everything. Natural beauty, trendy cities, but you might miss your next big adventure in a smaller town. We've got you covered on the Palmetto Porch. Discover South Carolina's official podcast. I'm Devin Whitmire. Come with me as I venture off the beaten path and learn about these towns from the locals who know them best. Check out the Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information, head on over to scpalmettoporch.com.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the David Mead Podcast. On today's episode, I have Hanan Laban with me, the CEO of the Winner Manly Seagulls. H, welcome to the show, mate. Before we talk about some advice you could help me out with, I know you've got a banking background, you're CEO of the Winner Manly Seagulls now. Can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what that was like?
Yeah, thanks, Meaty, and thanks for having me. I grew up in Wellington, New Zealand. Born and bred there. Went to school in New Zealand, and then I played rugby and league, which is common for most New Zealand kids. And then at the end of high school, I was able to come over to Australia played lower grades at Newcastle Knights and did my university there. Went over and played a year in the French comp made my way to Wynnum and have been at Wynnum for the last 15 years. So, really enjoy it at Wynnum and live in the area, and it's a good place. Yeah.
What team do you play for in France?
I played for Avignon in the French league. So that was a good experience. Yeah, we really enjoyed the 12 months we had over there.
Yeah, I played 3 years with the Catalan Dragons.
Yep.
And most of the boys are from Avignon there. So
Yeah, there's I think a few of the boys that you were at the Catalans with were sort of in the youth academy when I was there. Mikael Goudemont, Fouad Yaha, Tony Gigo, and a few others. So
And they've all just played in the GF just a couple of days ago. Yeah, I saw that. They've had a great year, and I wish they won it because it would have been the first time they ever won the GF.
Yeah, it was good. I saw because Toulouse won the championship, which was great for them, and I think the French rugby league fans were hoping for the double with the Catalans, but unfortunate. St. Helens have a great team, so they did really well.
Quality side, three in a row. But yeah, so you're growing up in New Zealand, Wellington. Yep. What a typical day look like there for you as a young kid? Do you remember?
Yeah, so I'm my background's Samoan, so grew up in a Samoan family. Like a lot of Pacific Island culture is very important. So we had a big family, and so a day for me would when I was a kid, I just sort of remember having breakfast as a family, and then going to school, playing every sport we could, and then catching up as a family together for dinner, and having all those sort of events that are generally relate around food. But just basically spent time with my friends playing sports, going to school, and being with family.
A lot of the
that's a long time ago, my childhood, so I can't remember too many specifics.
Yeah, well, mate, it's interesting getting to know a lot of the boys' backgrounds, especially the Pacific Islanders, because I feel like I can relate to a lot of it.
Yep.
Growing up in PNG, and a lot of the catch-up and important stuff happens around meals.
Yeah.
I was talking to Geordie Ricky last week or a week before.
Yep.
And he's talking about, as a kid, you normally sit on the floor and the adults sitting at the table. I hadn't thought about that for years, hey, until Geordie mentioned it. And I was like, you know what? I do remember sitting at the table a couple of times here and there. You're like, man, I should not be sitting up here.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of Pacific Island cultures, you know, the adults eat first. So it's very much, you know, the respecting your elders, and then the children were expected to wait and look after, you know, your older family members. So that was what I remember a lot about our meal times. I remember my younger brother used to say, he said, he goes, I haven't had much to eat today, but I've made a lot. Anyway, but that's it's a big part of our culture, and I think it's something that I value and appreciate too.
Do you think that's kind of helped you to get to where you are today? Are you consciously aware of that, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think, you know, looking back on my childhood, you know, our family had a really big emphasis on education. My grandparents were first generation migrants from Samoa. And so when they came to New Zealand, they didn't really have much money, and they didn't really know anyone in the area. So they worked, like a lot of migrant families, they worked very hard, and then they saved all the money they could to put my dad and my auntie through private school education. So, you know, back then, you know, in order for them to sort of save that amount of money to put my dad and my auntie through private school, you know, they were working multiple jobs and doing so much. And so that sort of culture and of, you know, focusing on education and that, I think, has sort of gone through all the generations. So my dad and my auntie value it highly, and then they've passed it on to all of us as kids. So, you know, we've all been lucky enough to go to good schools and go through university and see that as an important part of life. You know, and I sort of reflect that on the journey of my grandparents and sort of why that's important for all of us. And it's helped all of us in our lives and our careers, because it's sort of given us so much more opportunity.
While you're in school studying, did becoming a CEO ever cross your mind?
Not really, to be honest. So, and it's funny because when I reflect on my journey so far, it would have made, you know, it sort of seems logical that I'd work in sports administration. But when I was a kid, and even when I was going through university, I didn't expect to work in sports admin or be a CEO of a footy club. I thought I was going to have a career in finance, and sort of that's sort of what I wanted to do. I played football because I loved it, and I'd done it all my life, and will always be a lifelong fan of rugby league. But my dad is a sports broadcaster, so that's what he does, has done for his career. So he actually commentates rugby union. So he's a leaguey originally. So he coached league, played league, but he's now a rugby union commentator in New Zealand. So when Dad was coming up in media, and I was a little kid, I would be on the sidelines with Dad when he was commentating in the stands, doing all the stats for the games and sort of feeding him stats and things during the day. And so my whole childhood I spent was usually with Dad at sports games doing stats. And then when I went to play at Newcastle, I actually was fortunate to live with the chairman of the club, Michael Hill, because we had a family connection through Michael. And so for the 4 years that I was playing at Newcastle, I was living with Michael and Anne and the Hill family. And so, you know, over dinner and things, he'd talk about, you know, what was happening at the club and sort of sports administration issues that they were working through. And so I was just through osmosis picking up so much and learning so much. But even then I didn't even think, oh, hey, why don't I work in sports administration? And then it wasn't until sort of years later that I was sitting at my desk at work and thought, geez, you know, I've learned all this and done all this, and, you know, I think sports admin is what I want to do.
Yeah. I had a chat to Dave Donaghy last week and got some good tips and advice from him regarding productivity and staying focused.
Yep.
But do you have a daily routine or a way you kickstart the day so you're in the best possible state to go after the day?
I do. My routine has changed drastically since having kids.
Can I understand?
So my wife and I had our first child 10 months ago, Timur. So he's been a blessing to us. But I think for a lot of young families, when you go from family unit of two to a family unit of three, you know, things change a lot. So I think before kids, I sort of didn't have as much of a routine. As you know, each day would sort of depend on sort of what was happening. Whereas now with Timur, I sort of have to be a lot more structured, which I think helps actually with my day. So we get up about 4:30 or 5, which is when Timur's sort of rattling his cot to let us know he's up. And then I'll go to the gym, and then at about 6:30, Tanya would then come. Tanya, my wife, would come to the gym, and we'd do a swap with Timur. So she'd go and have her workout, then I'd go home, get ready for work, have breakfast, spend time with Timur, which is good. So we get those couple of hours together, and then I go to work. Work at semi-professional intra Super Cup level is probably a bit different because the players are all part time. So you sort of try and do or administration work from sort of 8 till 5, and then all the players come in for training from 5 o'clock. So they tend to be longer days because you don't see the players and staff until the end of the workday.
Is there a particular workout that you do when at the gym, or you kind of mix it up a bit?
We just joined Fitstop at Wynnum there, which has been really good. So it's sort of group fitness classes, which is good because I think, well, I was getting in the habit of, you know, we used to go to a sort of a larger box gym, and then I'd spend 15 minutes on my phone trying to come up with a workout, and then I'd go on the cross trainer for 10 minutes and leave. Whereas at least with, you know, your F45s and Fitstops and those sort of group fitness class, you just get in, you know, workouts planned for you, all the equipment's there, and you leave. So we're enjoying that.
And usually you're feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a good way to start the day.
Yeah, especially like training in a team environment, I think. For anyone who's spent their life in sports like yourself, media, or, you know, in footy, you get used to training in groups and, you know, training as a team and pushing other people. So I enjoy that. And it's sort of, you know, we really, it's a big part of our day. We do it every day. So we enjoy it.
That's awesome. When you're running a football club, Queensland Cup side, obviously you want the business to be profitable.
Yep.
Doing well. Is there a couple of key things that you're looking at to be effective in to make sure the club's running well financially?
Yeah, I think for a running a club at our level has some similarities to the NRL and the AFL, but it's very much a grant-based organisation, and the NRL to an extent is as well, where you're sort of the bulk of your revenue is grant-based. So
when you say grant-based, what does that mean?
So that's like the governing body, the NRL and the QRL, providing a grant to fund your activities, or a, you know, a leagues club funding your activities, etc. Whereas the a small percentage of our revenue comes from sort of owns not small but a lesser portion is own source revenue. So which is from gate sales and merchandise sales and sponsorships, etc. So as a result of that, there's a lot of accountability that comes with being a grant-based organisation, because the person that provides a grant to you would come with sort of certain levels of compliance that you need to meet. So probably the first step with running an organisation like that is making sure you're achieving all the things that you're expected to receive that grant. So in the NRL's case, there's a lot of coaching and pathways and development activities that need to happen. That's a big element of that. And then secondly, you know, for all your sponsors and corporate partners, etc., is just sort of meeting all the expectations under each of those contracts. So that's broadly sort of what happens at an admin level. But at the semi-professional level, which is you sort of wear multiple hats, because you have less staff and you have less resources. So the people who are in those positions, they're not just the football manager. They might also be looking after welfare.
Yep.
They might also be the under-20s coach, etc. And in my case, you know, I sort of wear multiple hats. As I sort of look after the administration and governance, but also have input to the commercial marketing and football operations as well.
Yep. Yeah, I just wanted to ask that question, a few questions around running a club, because I want to be able to help out the comp in the Tubusera village where I'm from in PNG, and just to see how they can get some advice from how, you know, CEOs in Oz run their clubs and run their businesses.
Yep.
So I wanted to get a little bit of just the key things that you're talking about. So it's like junior development's a big one to get grants.
Yep.
I don't know how the grant system works back in PNG, so I'd have to do a bit of homework on that. If there's a little club in the village, like if you think back to Samoa, trying to start up a little local team, what are the two or three things you're going to sit down and have a meeting with for the guys who are coming together to have a chat about when putting a team together?
I think in that specific situation, and I think that there's a lot of similarities to any organisation, but the first thing is getting as many people as you can that care about the place and care about the village and care about the team together as you can, because when you're trying to run a club or a small club off a small budget, you're relying on the discretionary effort or the extra effort from your people. So the majority of the people, in fact not the majority, everyone, I'd imagine in the case of the team in your village, will be volunteers who are just doing it out of the love. So if you can get as many people as you can to care about the village and the community together, that'll be step one. And then the second one is trying to work out roles for everyone. So generally an organization, you want a good sort of committee, like a board and governance who can help. So of those people in the village, someone might be the local solicitor or local accountant, and those are the sort of people to bring together, because they can bring the sort of professional elements and structural elements you need to run an organization. And then it's about, when I say getting everyone who cares about the communities, you might have someone that might not know much about rugby league, but they might be a local shop owner, etc., who might be able to provide funding and resources and sponsorship to the club, which will fund all the activities. And then there's all the hundreds of jobs that need to be done with running a football team, which is, if they have facilities, getting all the facilities ready, marketing lines, things as small as that, and, getting all the gear and all the jerseys and apparel and all that sort of stuff, is that takes time and that takes people.
Yeah.
So that's why you want as many people together as you can.
Yeah. There is a comp running there. There's normally four teams.
Yep.
And a couple of grades in each. But a lot of times we've got like cousins, uncles and stuff.
Yep.
Asking for jerseys. I've sent a couple of bulks of jerseys across there.
Yep.
Once the material gets there, it's kind of then like, and then what? What now,
Yep.
So people need to gain the skills to how to run the club so they can actually be self-sufficient.
Yep.
You do want help. You do want to get as much help as you can. I think gaining some skills in running that club would be pretty important.
Yeah, and I think once you've got all the people together that care, it's identifying a skills matrix, is identifying what are the skills that you need to run your club. We need someone to be the treasurer. So in your skills matrix, you say we need someone with financial skills. You go, all right, we need someone to, handle all the, legal and company secretary to work. So you say, all right, we need a solicitor.
Yep.
And so once they go through that, then you work out, okay, so we've got people that fill six of those roles, but we need four that are unfilled. So you either upskill the people that are there, or then you need to try and bring other people in to fill that skills matrix. So that sort of broad way of looking at that applies to every club from Manchester United to small clubs and villages. Is everyone has, there's still roles that need to be done, so you need to identify where they can be filled. So and I think once you've done that step, then you can go, okay, all right, so we need some more education around club administration. Who can we lean on, who can we talk to try and you know, fill that gap. And so that's why it's important in getting everyone together in the community that cares, because someone in your network might know you mm-hmm. and you know Dave Donaghy
yep.
or someone like that that might be able to provide, you know, some skill or direction or for that person. So, it's amazing how when you get everyone together in a village, it's amazing how big the network can be.
Yep.
Even like my village, my town where I'm from, in New Zealand, Wainui Armada, it's a small rugby league club in a small town in New Zealand, but there's so many people, like that's where I grew up. I was just at the footy club all the time, but there's so many people that have come through that club who have gone on, you know, to do really good things, and then as a result of that network just keeps getting bigger and bigger, because as those people grow and in their careers and in lives, they remember where they've come from and they want to come back and help.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure. That's opened my mind up about, you know, how, because I always get asked, why isn't there more PNG players playing in the NRL?
Yep.
I just think that, you know, where the development system there needs work, needs improvement.
Yep.
And I think if you can get kind of to the root of it all, which is, you know, at club level, if kids are taught well at the club level, but then I go to the football field, it's like, okay, why aren't these kids being taught? I go look at the field and it's rock hard.
Yep.
Like, man, if I'm a kid, I do not want to be playing on this field. You know, you see, I've watched a couple of games and, you know, no one wants to dive in the corner because there's pebbles everywhere, the ground's a hard rock. There's not much grass. So if you get the community around to care about, you know, the competition, the field, and how to run the club properly, I think this is why I'm getting some tips from you, you know, just so people can realise that they can do it by growing the network.
Yeah. Well, I think, like the reason why it's not just people who care about rugby league, it's people who care about the community, because I think that where, you know, clubs, you know, so your junior clubs are the most successful is when the club is the heart of the community. Yeah, that's where people meet. That's where people catch up and everyone's sort of social lives revolve around the club. And that's part of the reason why I love rugby league so much, because, you know, my club where I was from was the center of our town, and that's sort of what everyone did.
Yep.
And then everyone helped each other. You know, I think the ideal scenario for particularly the club in your village back home is that the club becomes the center of the town.
Yeah.
And then that's where everyone, you know, puts all their effort into.
Yeah. And I think they're doing a pretty good job, I think, with the amount of resources they have and probably the lack of help they've had in terms of grants and stuff in the village. I think they're doing well. But this obviously doesn't apply just to my village, because it's happening all across PNG.
Yep.
And that's why I want to help rugby league develop. So I'll be listening to this episode a few times to make sure I write down all these notes and, you know, send it out on a couple of pieces of paper to send out to my uncles and cousins so they can start to learn the skills of how to, you know, look after their clubs and make the competition grow. And hopefully the network and support system grow as well.
Yeah. Well, it's great work you're doing, because, you know, I think we spoke a couple of times that like Pacific Island Rugby League is obviously a big part of, of my heart is, this has got a big sort of focus there. And my dad has done a lot of work in Samoa and in New Zealand trying to help pathways for young Pacifica and Māori people in New Zealand. So I think it's wonderful that you do it, Meaty. So I think it's great work. So if I can help any more than this, I'd love to.
Yeah, for sure, mate. We'll have a few more chats for, you know, how to help the game develop. So thanks, mate. That'll be a huge help for them. A little bit about financial management. You worked in the banking world before?
I did, yeah.
How did you find that, and what was your role there?
Yeah, so I think, like I said before, so when I was coming through as a young one, I sort of my heart set on working in finance. So when I was at uni, I did degrees in economics and finance. After I came back from France, I was lucky enough to get a job at Westpac. So and interesting, talking about networks, I was able to get the job through a person who was at the club at Wyndham at the time. So that shows how important networks at footy clubs can be. So that opened a door there, and I spent 6 years at Westpac in the institutional and banking team in Brisbane, and it was a really good team, and a lot of good bankers and good leaders there that I got to learn from.
How long did you spend there?
6 years. So I worked in what they called the corporate banking team, and then which was sort of your mid-tier corporates in Queensland, and then I worked in the natural resources and infrastructure teams, which looked after the sort of major like mining and roads and infrastructure companies in Queensland.
What skills do you think you've got from there that have helped you transfer into a football admin? Or is anything you've taken from then gone, this is going to help a footy club, one or two skills?
Yeah, I look back on my time at Westpac. It's been really important for my development as an administrator and also as a leader. So banking is centered around risk management. So that's essentially the core. Well, there's lots of things which banks do now, but the team that I worked in focused a lot on risk management. I think risk management for any leader or running any organisation is critical, because you need to understand, what are your risks to your organisation, and then what are the processes and structures you'll put in place to manage them. So at the bank, risk management was centred around, if you were to lend somebody money, how much money is that organization able to handle, and then what is the risk to the bank if they weren't able to repay that debt. So that was the at a basic level how they would approach loan management, and I think some of those skills I was able to take away, and then sort of look at sports administration issues with the same lens. If we were to make this decision, how much risk is there in making that decision? And if we got that decision wrong, what would be the impact of that? So learning to look at decisions with that mindset, which I learned acutely from banking, has been really helpful.
And talk about risk management.
Yep.
If you knew a young athlete, your nephew, someone, and you're trying to, and they've just signed a big contract, something they're not used to, some numbers they're not used to seeing, and what would the first meeting and conversation look like to help him specifically just with his finances and how to approach that first year and moving forward?
Yeah, so the first thing I would say to that athlete is a really, really high percentage that you're not going to earn that amount of money for a long time. So for context, I think the average wage of a CEO in Australia, I can't remember having a look at it, but let's say it's somewhere between 200 to 400k. That's been a CEO of a leading organisation in Australia, to which there aren't that many people. I think the average wage in the NRL is 330,000. So that just shows you that, because unless there's a small amount of people that can transition from being a athlete on that amount of money, then going straight to being a CEO of a leading ASX organisation, it's important for the player to realise that they're probably not going to get that amount of money forever, unless they have other skills which they can lean on. And so then it's important to say, all right, so what are your financial goals for yourself and your family that you'd like to achieve? So if those goals are, I'd like to own my house outright within the next 5 to 6 years, or I want to have an investment portfolio, or I want to, support other family members, et cetera. So identifying what those goals are, and then stripping it right back to, okay, those are the goals I want to achieve, and then stripping it back to, all right, what sort of budget and financial plan do I need to work to achieve those goals, knowing that I'm only going to be earning this amount of money these amount of years before it transitions, it drops off to something else. I think that's the a sort of conversation that will be helpful, in order for athletes to achieve those goals, because I think where And this isn't a rugby league specific issue. I think where professional athletes have got themselves into trouble is they think that the $300,000 contract or the, in the NBA or NFL's case, the $50 million contracts last forever. But unfortunately, they have a small amount of time that you can earn that amount.
Yep.
The other thing which the other thing that I would, you know, highly recommend is going back to that point is the only way you can continue to earn that amount of money is if you have other skills. And then I would say to all athletes really, and it's really important at the Intrust Super Cup level is whilst you're earning this amount of money, and that's great, and whilst you have those financial goals, it's really important to also invest in yourself. And that's not just buying, you know, cool cars or nice clothes. That's investing in education for yourself and your family and your partner and trying to upskill yourself and educate yourself enough so that you have other skills that will allow you to transition to something else after football. And so I think that's really important, not just for a long-term point of view, but I also think, and I'm sure Walshy from the Bronx would back this up, but also from a short-term and medium-term point of view for your own career, if you've got other things that you're working towards, then you're more balanced in your life. And when you're more balanced, I think you're more effective in your performance.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. And talking about like you've got your goal set, you're pretty clear with what you want to do. That kind of, for me growing up as a young athlete, I didn't really have those goals set. So it was just the day to day decisions that affect you long term, you know, like, yep. You and the missus feel like going out for lunch and then it turns into a habit. Just,
yep.
Let's go out for lunch real quick. I'm hungry now, you know, just talking about discipline around finances.
Yep.
I feel like I haven't been disciplined at all. In some areas I have been. Around my finances, probably not so much. Where is a good place to start when wanting to get discipline around finance? I know you said goal setting's good, where you want to be, make it clear.
Yep.
After that step, what do you think? How do you develop that discipline?
I think it's an interesting question. I think the answer really is it needs to be something that you're comfortable with. So take weight loss for comparison. If you're somebody that, you know, if you put someone on a super strict diet where they can't zero carbs or, you know, things like that, if you're not already have a lot of discipline in that area, you might get a short-term boost, but it'll be hard to maintain for the long term. And I think for financial management, it's a similar sort of situation, is that if you're super rigid and super disciplined, if that's who you are as a person and that's something you're comfortable with, then you'll be able to sustain it. But if it's something that you can't sustain, then you're better off pulling it back a little bit, allowing a bit more flexibility with your budget while still generally going in the right direction. And that's something that you can sustain because, yeah, I just find that in life, particularly with financial management, is that it's your human impulses that are guiding your everyday decisions. So unless you've got something that's allows that flexibility and is able to sustain, then it's not going to be something you can manage long term.
Just a little personal question.
Yep.
If you can help me a bit about this, I'm not sure. You may be able to help others in a similar boat. My wife and I are looking to buy a home.
Yep.
Soon.
Yep.
What are some good questions to ask when meeting the broker or accountant leading into buying a home?
I think one is understanding like when you're buying a home, that's obviously a 30-year commitment. So most mortgages are 30 years. And so it's understanding your ability to make your repayments over those 30 years. That, to me, that's the first step for any homeowner. This is general advice too. I'm not qualified to give specific advice. I think you as a purchaser and my wife and I are going through this similar process at the moment. You just have to be comfortable that you can make those repayments. Because from putting my banking hat on, The first thing the bank will look at is, can that couple make these repayments over the 30 years? And that decision will guide whether they offer you the money or not. In terms of whether it's the right house and, you know, an investment long-term for the house, that depends on what your, you know, what your reason for purchasing the house is. So if you're buying the family home, there's other reasons for why you'd purchase it. If you're buying an investment property, there's probably more specific things you need to look at, where I'd recommend getting specific advice on that. But if it's a family home, then, you know, it's critical. And you guys love the house. It's what you want. You know, you see yourselves being there forever. You know, the first thing I'd look at is, am I comfortable? And am I allowing for future events that'll pop up to be able to make those repayments over the 30 years? That's probably the main thing that I'd look at.
On a little bit about leadership. I know we've got about 10 minutes left, so.
Sure.
A little bit about leadership. What do you think your leadership style is? Everyone's got different styles.
Yep. I'm probably more democratic. Which is, you know, I like to get information and opinions from the team, from our wider group. So, you know, I'm always keen to, you know, consult with people, talk to people, understand people's views on certain decisions, and then go from there. You know, I think, you know, the way things sort of operate at Wynnum, I think I said to you before, because we're a semi-professional club and we rely on a smaller amount of people to do all the jobs, everyone wears multiple hats, and so it's important that, you know, the group of people that are sort of the senior managers at the club, that their input is provided and they get to contribute to decisions, because you can't sort of get your grip on everything because you're sort of doing so many things at once. And that's a style that I like as well. I think it, you know, works for me personally with my leadership.
Yeah, I think it's worked out pretty good, because this year all three teams made the finals.
Yep.
No, there was a disappointing loss for the Cup side on the weekend, losing the GF.
Yep.
The Colt side went on to win.
Yes.
BRL side also made the semis.
They did, and the under-18s made the semis as well.
Four teams.
Yep.
Total made the semis. So I think there's some form of leadership that's working at Wynnum. Manly Seagulls there. And it was a bit of a disappointing loss.
Yep.
On the weekend for the Cup side. How did you see the year go for the club as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, Sunday, which was obviously a tough game. You know, I think, you know, Norse, they had a great season, and I thought they were deserved winners. They played really well in the day. As much as it hurts for us, you know, that they, you know, they really played well on the day and earned the premiership. But from the club's perspective, yeah, we're incredibly proud of what we've achieved. You know, this year's semi-final was the second consecutive semi-final that the club had been to, and that in itself is a huge feat, as well as was the second consecutive Colts grand final that we went to. In 2019, every single team made the grand final, which was 18s, BRL, Colts and Cup. And then this year we almost backed it up. Yeah, super proud that we've been able to achieve that level of success across the club. And that's come from contributions of lots of people to do it. And that's sort of why I come back to it. I think democratic, the style works really well, because there's so many people have contributed to that success. It doesn't take one person or two people for that to happen. But I think this year in particular, I was probably especially proud because 2020 was so hard for, you know, our competition, particularly because the competition was cancelled after one round. And then as a consequence of that, a lot of the grants, sponsorship and revenue that comes with playing in the competition didn't come through. And so we had to really buckle down as a club with cash flow management, human resource management, et cetera, to sort of get through that period. We were fortunate that the NRL kept playing, and then that ensured that 2021 was able to happen. But there were certainly some tough days in 2020 where we weren't sure whether we'd be able to get out of it. And then obviously we had some our own challenges at the club with the passing of Mitch Cronin, which had a huge impact on the club and the playing group as a whole. And so, you know, I sort of felt like 2021 was almost like 2 years in one, because you had 2020 and then you had all of 2021 as well. So it's almost felt like 2 years rolled into 1 year. And, you know, for us as a club to sort of manage all those challenges, and then, you know, even during the season this year, we had multiple lockdowns which stopped the comp. Our head coach had to go into quarantine just before the finals series, so he missed the first couple of weeks of the finals. Players had to go into quarantine at various times, and yet through all those challenges for us to you know, achieve that and just be that close to winning a premiership, I mean, I was super proud of the club and everyone. So yeah, as much as it hurts, it's you sort of when we sit down and reflect on it, it is something that, you know, we can be proud of.
Yeah, certainly. Man, I think when you put it like that, it's yeah, certainly a year to be proud of, as much as the loss hurt over the weekend. And so, H, as we wrap this up, I'd like to ask a few rapid fire questions.
Sure.
Answer them as short as you like, as long as you like.
Yep.
Just a few fun questions. Man, what's your favorite meal? More specifically, is there a favorite dish from back home that you enjoy?
Yeah. Favorite dish would be pangi popo, which is coconut buns, salmon coconut buns, as well as my wife's, she makes these great brownies as well. So they're probably top two.
Yeah, the coconut buns, they're dangerous.
They're very dangerous.
You can sit there and eat them all day. Yeah. Is there any particular music that you enjoy listening to?
I've got a pretty wide sort of playlist. So anything from R&B, country, rock. So yeah, I'm pretty mixed. Yeah.
What's your workout music?
Workout similar? Music. At the moment, it's country, which is a bit weird. But yeah, no, that's what it is at the moment.
Yeah. If there's a big billboard on the road, what are you going to write on it for people to see?
Is it a billboard for what's it saying? Is it about?
It's your message to the world.
My message to the world. That's a good question. it would be get an education.
Yeah, I like that one. It's a very true thing, isn't it? Educating yourself. I'm finding that you know, educating myself now on outside of rugby league.
Yep.
Certainly makes me feel a bit more balanced.
Yep.
As you said earlier on. Do you have a favorite quote? It's probably similar to what I just asked you before, but
favorite quote. Actually, I don't have a favorite quote. I've got an anecdote on quotes, though. I went down before I started at Wynnum. I was able to do a couple of days of personal development at the Melbourne Storm. And then when you visit a lot of sporting organizations, or even a lot of organizations, you'll see a lot of quotes that are up on the walls, you know, and, you know, Vince Lombardi or you know, these sorts of things at these organizations. And then and a lot of those quotes are great and they're meaningful. And then when I went to Melbourne and I saw the quotes on their walls, and they weren't by Vince Lombardi or people like that. They're all quotes by people who had been at the Melbourne Storm. So on the walls at Melbourne were a quote by Craig Bellamy or a certain player. And then I asked Frank Panisi, the GM of footy down there, about it. And he said, when you put a quote on the wall by someone famous, that might mean something to one person. But when you put quotes by people who are in the organization, that means something to everybody, because that's a quote that's relevant to the organization and it's made by somebody that's there and cares about the place. And so that sort of stuck with me, because – I do love quotes, but like rather than putting up, you know, all these things by external people, you know, it's really important for your own internal culture to keep reinforcing, you know, the standards and things that has made your club great. And I think that's why Melbourne have been able to sustain success, because they've got a really acute understanding of those sorts of elements. So, yeah, I don't have a favorite quote for you, Meaty, but that's my view on quotes.
Hey, that's a magic answer. I love that one. So as we wrap this up, the very final question, is there a charity that you personally support or recommend that listeners or viewers might be able to help out with?
So the Men in League do a lot of work in rugby league, and they're very supportive for rugby league, not just rugby league players, but you know also the wider rugby league network and their families. You know, I know of multiple stories where you know a player who's hasn't played the game for 70 years, but they've been a volunteer or a supporter for a club, and they've fallen on tough times, and the Men in League has helped them. So, you know, going back to our conversation before around the football club being the center of your community and having that wide network, you know, I think the work that the Men in League does and supporting people across that network has been great. We've done a bit of work with the Men in League at the club, and they're a great organisation that support the game.
Yeah, for sure. I think Benny, I can mention Men in League as well. So
okay,
glad that you guys are supporting a great cause.
Yep.
H, just want to thank you for your time today, mate, and your knowledge. I know especially the guys in the village. Hopefully they can listen to this, take some notes, and hopefully they can put some things in place so that you know. Rugby leader, the grassroots level can grow back in PNG. So really appreciate your time and input today. Certainly a benefit for me anyway. Thank you.
That's a pleasure, Meaty, and love the work you're doing. So thank you.
Thanks, H.
Cheers.
Cheers, man. Thanks, man.
Thanks for shaking my hand.
That's all right. What about that? Scotty's that one.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind-the-scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.